Hi, and welcome along to Early Excellence's Head to Head podcast. It's great to have you here. I'm Sarah Carey, School Improvement Lead here at Early Excellence, and in these podcasts, I'll be connecting with real head teachers and school leaders. We'll be discussing hot topics in primary and early years education and sharing some real experiences. So keep listening to hear more about school inspections and impactful school improvement strategies. Hello, hello. It's a time for another Head to Head podcast. I hope the sun is shining wherever you are listening to this. Today, I'll be chatting with Lisa Whiteley, Trust Partner at Learners Trust, and she'll be sharing her work on the project that she's been running to develop an early year strategy across the trust that she's been developing with her colleagues. And having listened to her talk about it at a few events recently, but also having worked with her over time at points over the last couple of years, I know it's going to be a really interesting listen, particularly around, yes, the strategy and the development of that, but also some practical tools that have been explored and developed across the trust. So I'm really looking forward to it. Having kind of seen you at some of those events and seen the delegates' reactions with the information that you're sharing and the tools that you've talked about, I know it's going to be a really valuable listen for our people today. So let's get started with hearing a little bit about you and your role and your experience and all those sorts of things, just to set the scene a little bit.
So I'm currently a trust partner, as you said, for Learners Trust, and have been for the last 8-9 years. Obviously started my career in teaching, knew from an early age that I always wanted to be a teacher, trained with the 3 to 7 year group, but very quickly became a deputy head and a head teacher because I knew that's where my passion was. I wanted to develop the leadership of a school really quickly. So that led to headship of an infant school, primary schools, executive headship, but was continually driven to achieve the next thing, which has brought me to my current role within the trust. So we're a trust of 18 schools, and my role is school improvement lead over a hub of five primary schools and one through special school.
Super. And I think it's interesting because what you haven't said is I'm the early years lead for the mats. And I think we need to be really clear at this point. Actually, no, you're spinning lots of plates, aren't you? And obviously early years is part of that, but developing leadership is also a key part of what you do in your role as well, isn't it?
Yeah, they're my two areas of expertise, I would say, and my real passion. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I've met your CEO. He was at one of the events that we were doing together, and I know he's really passionate generally, but was very passionate kind of talking about early years. And that was the audience that he had at that time. But I think it was really clear when I was listening to him speak, but also with my work with you, the trust's got some really clear vision and values, and you've worked really hard to develop an ethos and culture. So I think it'd be really good to set the scene around that as well, if that's okay.
Yeah, Matt, the CEO, he has a real good knowledge of early years, but the culture of the organisation is really important to me, and obviously to him. I feel it's the personality of our trust. It's everything we stand for, and our trust mission is linked to that equity for all children across all of our schools. So we've got schools in area of deprivation, we've got a few more affluent schools, but that equity around enriching lives and having high levels of achievement and effective well-being are really what sits behind the culture. Obviously our values drive our work, so our values are linked to the word choices. So in everything we do, we try to make sure we're connected, helpful, organised, informed, candid, effective, and try and keep things simple. We try and remove that ambiguity and the barriers for our children, and keep things simple, keep our work simple.
And again, you know, you've got a good amount of schools across the trust. I know you've got a hub of 6, but that doesn't mean that you ignore the other 12. You know,
absolutely not.
There, so lots of them will have early years, and of course that kind of the choices. Yes, it's important for the children, but I've also seen it in action with the staff as well. It resonates with everybody, doesn't it? Really, and you also use the word team, don't you? A lot when you kind of talk about training and connection. So tell us what team means for you.
So that's kind of expectation of how we work in that group setting, whether it's with heads, whether it's with delegates at conference. And it started from our mini heads collaborations where our six heads get together. And it's about turning up, making sure we're always in the room. It's about engaging. So there's an expectation that everybody will contribute to those discussions. Then the A stands for a myriad of things. We either attempt, adapt, adopt, or achieve something within that space. We motivate each other, we maintain our high standards, but then we support and share our good practice so that we can implement change and just drive high expectations in whatever aspect of work we're looking at.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, obviously, I visit lots of schools in the role that I do, and you do hear kind of acronyms tossed around, but I can absolutely hand on heart say I've seen you living and breathing it. And actually, that teams yeah. thing is almost part of what we're doing today in terms of, you know, wanting to engage and motivate and support others and really kind of make that difference more widely than just your trust. And I know, again, as part of the work that you've been doing is the Universal Rise offer, that you've been looking to kind of do that as well, to support outwardly as well as your trust. So that's really, really good. So I'm not quite sure when, but I know it wasn't this year. I would say a couple of years ago then you were tasked with kind of heading up the big project around developing an early years strategy. So how yeah. did that come about? What were the key kind of aims and objectives for that? What did you want to achieve? It's kind of the why really behind why it was you, but actually more importantly, what it is that, you know, your parameters for what you were wanting to achieve.
Yeah, and the why is really important to us as it is to everybody. But we felt at Learners we've got really strong systems and processes around self-evaluation, and the early years is embedded with various strands within that. So it features within teaching and learning, within curriculum, outcomes, but probably not as explicit as I thought it should be, and Matt agreed with that. And obviously we know the experience, the foundation stage, is called the foundation stage for a reason. And if that's not strong, then it's really harder for the key stages that follow. So I visited schools. We've got 12 schools in our trust with early year settings, and noticed that there was a really varied approach to early years. And in some ways that was great because they were taking their context and cohort needs into account. However, when we stood back, we didn't have a trust-wide vision. We didn't have a rationale for our early years, and we didn't really define what we wanted our little learners to look like at the end of early years foundation stage and beyond their GLD outcomes. So we've got some strong early years leads, but we've got some head teachers who are strong with their early years knowledge, but some openly stated that they felt they hadn't got enough knowledge and expertise to quality assure their provision. So that was our starting point. And in early 2024, one of my schools who have double the percentage of pupil premium children, it's Brogan School, they achieved a well-deserved outstanding Ofsted judgment under the old framework. And at the end of the inspection, Matt and I were in the feedback, and I just looked at him and said, we need to capture this. We need to codify what's happening. And he just said, yeah, off you go, Lisa. So that's where it started.
That's where it started. And of course, listeners, if listeners have been listening to a podcast for a little while, they will recognise Brogan's name. Brogan did a podcast back with me back in January, talking about her 10 steps to curriculum development. And she talked a lot about that highly deprived area that she's in. And indeed, I've visited that. And I think it's really interesting because I know you've just talked about the 12 schools having different contexts, and actually that still has a part to play, doesn't it, in terms Absolutely. Of we still need to recognise that different context. But a phrase I think that's come through, particularly in Brogan's podcast, and I know you've talked about it too, is that kind of supporting the most vulnerable will support all children, and that's yeah. kind of a precedent that's been set. And of course that has come about completely independently, if you like, of the messaging that's coming out from Ofsted. Ofsted are giving that messaging as well, but that's something that has grown and evolved from kind of your schools and your trusts. So you've got 12 schools with early years. So there's there's lots to go at. So there's still that scope for variance, which there does need to be in terms of the context for the children, for the staff. But it's also important for that consistency and expectation and shared understanding, I guess. So where did you start? You've got your why, you've got you want to achieve, you know what you're kind of basing it on, but where did you then start? Because that's a lot of schools, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, well, we have a very well-defined improvement process in the trust, and we have key questions that we sometimes call our patronising questions, because they are questions that we know we have to consider when we're implementing improvement and change. So the first question we ask ourselves is, why is this a priority? We think about what's working well inside our organisation, but also outside our organisation. We consider who needs to be part of that guiding team, and that's what we use as the starting point. So obviously I'd got existing knowledge from being an early years teacher, but it was a long time ago. So I engaged in some research and reading. We've got links with Waterton Trust. I'd had a good look through their strategy and it was everything I believed, but I wanted to understand the process of how they'd got to that end point. So I spoke to Sarah, the early years lead at Waterton, also engaged with some of the Alistair Bryce Clegg work, Julie Fisher, looked at trust data, conducted some analysis of trust data from the last 3 years, looked at which areas were improving, which were declining, and for which groups of children, but also looking at the Ofsted research that had happened, reading The Bold Beginnings, The Best Start in Life, all those documentations that they published, and looking at the findings from that, but also talking to you guys at Early Excellence that really ignited my passion again for early years. So throughout those early days, I went to as many conferences as I could, the RISE conferences, CST, webinars, podcasts, almost saturated myself in early years, but with the caveat that to be mindful that you can almost do too much research. You can have too many ideas and opinions floating around your head that don't help with that clarity. So after that initial stage, we got a working party together. So this was about really getting the buy-in to the work we were about to do. So I invited an early years lead from each of our hubs to get that diversity around the table. So not all like-minded people, they had very different approaches, which led to some really candid and rich discussions. Yeah. But it was all about what we wanted for our children. Yeah. So again, thought it was really important to start with vision. So we didn't rush this, but because of the importance of it, we wanted to get it right. And we agreed on areas that we wanted to clarify expectations for, and then try to put them in a priority order, because that's part of the way we work at Learners. So we came up with 4 areas for our vision linked to accessible environments, adaptable curriculum, ambitious learning, and active engagement.
Nice. And actually, they link really nicely back to the underpinning principles of the statutory framework, don't they?
Absolutely.
And lots of the research are out there that we know around kind of children, environment, adults, learning and development, all of those sorts of things. And I think it's so important to kind of really emphasise that actually when we're doing strategic thinking, we do need to take our time and do the research and do the reflection. And as you say, not overly saturate, but kind of read widely or explore widely. But it's also getting the right people. And I think it's really good that obviously you've got one hub, but there are other hubs across your trust so that there is representation from each of those. And you use that word candid, which is part of the kind of choices that you talked about. So again, you can almost hear elements of your trust culture and ethos coming through in your conversations. But that research, that rationale, and that getting people around the table, because it's, again, this is collaborative, isn't it? It's about that buy-in and people's voices being heard. So it's choosing the right people and not necessarily the easy people. You don't necessarily want people who are going to agree, because you want to have some really deep conversations and discussions, and you want to push yourselves really. And again, sometimes that can get missed, that need to take the time can sometimes get missed, but also that need to, you know, have conversations with people that might challenge you or challenge your thinking is a really crucial part of a development process, really, so that you can make sure you've explored all the options and kind of considered the different perspectives. And I think that's really, really important.
Just going back to that diversity around the table, there were some really challenging conversations and really challenged my thinking around early years as well, which was great. It was great. And people really bought into the piece of work that we were doing, so much so that I had heads and other early years leads asking if they could be part of that working party, which was like, great. Yeah, come in, help us out. Bring your views and opinions with you. And it almost turned into little sub parties that went away and did research themselves on each of those four aspects of our vision. So it really started to grow legs, and no time constraint on it, which was great for me. We could really dig into the detail of the work.
Okay, so that's where you started. And I think it would probably be fair to say for each of those strands that you've just talked about, kind of around the environments and curriculum, for example, you then looked to over time developing tools, having discussions and developing tools that were going to help across the board. So do you want to kind of talk a little bit about some of those, each of those, whatever you'd like to share, really?
So we started to look at what schools need, what barriers are the schools facing, but we wanted to align the resources we created to each element of the vision, but also create something that was sustainable, that was a system or a process that if all of us on the working party walked away, that work would still continue and be effective.
It's about that future proofing, isn't it? And I think that's one of the strong testaments of leadership is, you know, after people have gone, does it continue to stand the test of time? Because the rationale behind it will still be the same, and the research and the systems and the work that's gone into it, so that it is embedded and part of practice and routine rather than something that's got to be done and that can be dropped off as soon as, you know, key people have left.
Yeah, absolutely. And the things that were coming out were watered down key stage one classrooms, overloaded timetables, no time for adults to be in provision, all the things that we've heard lots of times from people. Elements of staff training that they thought were missing. And we've built some really clear systems and processes for key stage one and two. So the other element was aligning what we were developing for early years with the structures that were already in place. Mm-hmm. So we developed a number of things. We developed environment audits, and again, trying to work top to bottom, as in with the environments need to be right before we can think about the curriculum and the teaching and learning. So we created audits that were linked to resourcing, space, layout, purpose, and we looked at both indoor and outdoor. And it's been an ongoing piece of work that's now beginning to re-resource our early years settings. We've designed a waggle classroom, and we've used early excellence resources to resource that room. And I'll talk about the impact of that later on. But it's led to a project, a trust-wide project, where I've been very, very lucky that the CEO and the finance team have recognised the importance of early years and what a big project it is, and have allocated a pot of funding for us to do that job and get all of our early years classrooms resourced to a high standard.
And I think it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you will know, and lots of the listeners will know, we talk about auditing resources and getting the indoor environment and then the outdoor environment, getting them into a strong position, and that will elevate a lot of learning. But it's not the only thing that needs to be done, but it's a really good start point. And again, we've got free resources, free audit tools. We often share our brochures and say, use those. If you can create collections like that, that will reflect our development in the curriculum. But actually, you've gone that extra layer, which is what we would then talk about in terms of it's about yours and your team's depth of understanding of that and making it your own. It's not just a done it, you know, I've done early excellences kind of tick list and I've done it. It's the so what and what does this mean and what does it mean for us and what's our thinking, and you've done kind of all of that work around it too. And I think it's crucial, you know, I was at a roadshow last week looking at some outdoor resources, and I was very fortunate to have 15 or 20 heads in the room in the morning. And I was kind of talking to them about, you can't really just allocate a specific amount of money, for example, £3,000 to early years, year one, year two, year three, year four, year five, year six. Actually, the learning resources and tools that the teachers need to deliver the curriculum and that the children need to learn that curriculum in terms of practice and application in early years, they're much more expensive in terms of what you need, because we are talking big things and things that need to stand the test of time over 30, 60, 90 children in a cohort. But you wouldn't dream of not giving, for example, your year sixes the protractors and the pens and pencils that they need. And it's just, it looks very different in early years, but they are still the tools of the trade to make sure that high quality learning can take place. So it's crucial. And you mentioned your CFO, and equally it's crucial that they're included in kind of the strategic thinking in that journey to understand the vision and to understand the why, because often in early years in key stage one, what you've got to invest in will last longer, but actually is going to cost a significant more money, and there needs to be an understanding of the why of that, so that everybody knows what we're doing and why we're doing it, to pull in the direction that you want to pull in. So okay, so that's environment audits. Anything else you want to share about that, or do you want to talk about any other tools?
It wasn't just about having the right resources in the room. It was about layout and visiting schools and challenging staff to why this, why here, and just asking questions about access for children and links in learning. So whilst the audit itself looked at resources, there were other questions around the how of using the resources. So once we were kind of satisfied that we'd got something that would align with our vision around environment, we moved on to curriculum. And I don't claim to be an early years curriculum expert, but obviously Brogan is. So we used Brogan. We used Brogan to talk through the principles of her curriculum design. So it wasn't about giving people a finished article, a finished curriculum. It was about the process she went through and the considerations she made of her cohort and her pupil needs to design her curriculum. So looking at vertical and horizontal progression, building on prior knowledge and skills, but with that laser focus on context and the needs of a cohort. So while she's been rolling that out at conferences and our own early years conference that we had back in October in the Trust, she's also been drip feeding messages into our regular half-termly network meetings and just challenging early years leaders on their curriculum design and asking key questions that really makes them think more deeply about the diet they're providing for their children.
And I think it's really important to really just pick back up on what you're not saying to all your trust schools is you must deliver this curriculum that's being delivered in Brogan School. It's about, actually, we expect you to go through similar thought processes that may result in creating something similar or something different, but it's the thought processes and the questions and really digging into the why and having real clarity over that. You know, Brogan will talk about the school vision. She talks about golden threads. She talks about key kind of concepts and foundational knowledge. She talks about that spiral. And so again, it's making sure that the people who are involved in designing that curriculum for early years, but also that's going to connect to key stage one and beyond, understand, you know, how young children learn most effectively, that need to practice and rehearse, that need to kind of retrieve information and stick new learning to it, the kind of how schemas build, how young children are motivated, all of that sort of research, so that as the curriculum is being developed, or for some schools being refined or revisited, that it's steeped in the theory of how it can be effective, almost regardless of the content you put in. Actually, that's up to you, but it's the processes is in the theory and those opportunities that are going to really keep things simple and make it as easy as possible for the children to learn, but also as easy as possible for teachers to teach. I think, you know, that's really key. And certainly, as I say, if listeners haven't listened to that podcast that we did a couple of months ago, I'd encourage them to kind of go back to it for sure, particularly to this conversation. And I think it would be fair to say that those conversations that Brogan's been having in your networks, but also, you know, when she shares things at conferences, it seems to kind of have made people, for the most part, go, oh yeah, that makes sense to think of it like that. I mean, I was with you on Friday and Brogan did her, you know, did a little bit, and there were early years people in the room, there were highly experienced people in the room, there were heads in the room, but there was tens, and it's not the first time I've heard her, seen her deliver it or chatted to her about it. And like I say, it's not the content, it's the thinking behind it. And it does feel like there was a, oh yeah, okay, hadn't thought about that. Would it be fair? Is that kind of what's come out of the network?
Yeah, absolutely. And I looked around on Friday at the conference and all eyes are on her when she's talking, which really shows their level of engagement that I don't have when I'm standing up and talking, but you could just stand back and see them really engaged in what she was saying. Mm-hmm. And the concept of revisiting and refining that process each year when the new cohort comes in is crucial. So the process around that curriculum design, as you say, is the most important part. Mm-hmm.
Because just as we wouldn't want little robots in our class and we wouldn't want kind of reception children being mini year one robots or anything like that, we're not for 1 minute saying everybody needs to do as Brogan does, but actually it is the thinking. And I suppose what I would say is it's about having the confidence to be able to talk about your curriculum and your curriculum design in a way that Brogan has the confidence to talk about hers. So the next person could be delivering a completely different curriculum, but it's having that confidence and that depth of understanding. And of course, knowing that it's having impact for the children. Okay. So then kind of you've looked at play progression as well, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, when we got to the curriculum, we were halfway through what we felt was our early years strategy, but as experts in the room, we were using language like continuous provision, enhanced provision, and we realised that not everybody who's working in early years is an expert. So it was really, really important for us to have some shared language and understanding around terminology like continuous provision, enhanced provision, objective-led planning, so that we were all singing from the same hymn sheet. And on the back of that, we developed the play progressions because, as we realised, not everybody who's in provision with our young children is an expert in early years. So we looked at what other settings were developing and we came up with a skill set for every area of the classroom, everything we could possibly think of and outside. So there's a play progression for mud kitchens, there's a play progression for small world play, and we split it into emerging, developing and extended skills. So whether children were in nursery or reception, developmentally we could dip in to their skill stage. So we were very explicit about the skills we might see in those areas, about the resources, about the vocabulary we might be using with the children, so that anybody could be actively involved in the provision. And I think the play progressions are the resource that have had the most impact to date, because not only is it enabling staff to be in provision, but it's encouraging that back and forth conversation with children. It's giving them skills to work on, but it's also giving the vocabulary to include in those conversations.
So that's kind of how I would imagine, therefore, from what you're saying, also helped the quality of the interactions in terms of those adults not leading the learning, but following the learning, but knowing kind of the line of travel, as it were, and the trajectory. And it's almost like again, listeners will know we talk about making sure that your provision connects to your curriculum and to your teaching through continuous provision planning. But what you're talking about is almost the next layer on. And you know, having the same resources in continuous provision from the first day to the last day feels like, and so what? Particularly if you're not experienced, so what does progression look like? And I think you're absolutely right. What you're looking for is for children to come from go from being explorers in the water to experts in the water, being explorers to becoming this mastery of that area of provision and those learning resources. And by becoming, you know, experts in that, they will be practicing and applying their newly acquired knowledge and skills and vocabulary into that experience, that they can become experts within it. So it sounds, and again, I know I did hear one of your colleagues talking about the play questions. In fact, I feel like I might need to line her up for a podcast, but we'll hold that thought for now. And I'm so pleased that you mentioned outside as well, because of course that can sometimes be the other disconnect. But when we're talking about early years and provision, we absolutely are talking about the indoor provision as well as the outdoor provision. And of course, we know from research that adult interactions, high quality adult interactions, make a significant contribution to helping children in terms of raising outcomes over time. It's not just the interactions and back and forth, it is the quality of that. It's not necessarily the amount, it is the quality of that in terms of supporting language and communication, particularly in that back and forth, as you say, and that vocabulary, but also that thinking and that wondering and that finding out and making connections. I think that, you know, they're both really, really key. And the play progressions, you know, from my interpretation, correct me if I'm wrong, it's not like a tick list of every child must do every single thing in order. Yeah. It's about a structure that can help craft where the children are going, but also that really strengthen the adults' understanding and knowledge of those areas of provision that will then equip them well to be able to engage with the children in the right way.
Yeah. And you've mentioned there the kind of how, moving from exploring and active engagement. And that led to another piece of work around the characteristics of effective learning. Because again, when we were talking to staff in school, there wasn't that clarity on what they were and the how children learn. So we developed a bit more in-depth structure around defining the characteristics of effective learning. So those play progressions went hand in hand with the characteristics, and it's kind of led to more deeper understanding and hopefully more clarity in end of year reports and profiles around how of children's learning.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, characteristics of effective learning are statutory. My colleague Phil right now will be listening to this going, woo, and waving a flag, because we know we all talk about characteristics, but he's particularly passionate about it. And sometimes they don't get the kind of platform that or the recognition that they do deserve. They are statutory. We need to be supporting and facilitating them. But they're also, you know, if we're not doing that well, that's a missed opportunity. It really is to support children as learners and thinkers. And when you look at what they are, they're not subject specific, so they're vitally important, but it's not about kind of hoping that they happen by accident or that the children will naturally develop those things. To a point they will, but we need to be really facilitating them and really nurturing them and really kind of helping the children make their thinking visible, what they're doing visible, if that makes sense. That's really interesting. And I think the final, probably the final thing you've worked on, but I know one of the things I wanted to touch on that you've worked on around your quality framework is around the expectations for your heads and school leaders around their understanding of EYFS. And I know, you know, when I visit schools and do strategic reviews, I always have time with the heads first to kind of see their understanding and let them talk to me. And sometimes part of my role is to upskill those heads and kind of take them by the hand and stand with them and say, okay, this is what I'm seeing. Look at that. And let's look at this and talk about what we're seeing or what you should be looking for and, kind of coaching through. And I think that's for us always, again, been important, because head teachers need to be able to talk about their early years as they would any other year group, not for an inspection point of view, is what we would say, is from a point of view of being able to make informed decisions about practicing pedagogy, being able to strategically make the right decisions about investment and staffing and quality of education, but also to be able to offer the right sort of constructive support and feedback to the early years team. And I know you said at the very start, some of your heads were confident and competent, and some of them, you know, very openly kind of said, actually, I don't think I'm where I need to be. And yet, of course, if we then layer in, we know in the new inspection toolkit, if you're looking to secure that strong outcome, it explicitly says in the early years toolkit, leaders need to be, head teachers need to be knowledgeable. Now, I know the work that you were doing with your heads came before the new toolkit and before, you know, all of that expectation. So it's nothing to do with you jumping through a hoop for Ofsted. That's not what it's about. Right. But I'm sure some of the things that you perhaps will talk about now will maybe help with heads who are maybe thinking about what might I be able to do to help secure that strong standard in the early years. I know it's part of your kind of framework and your discussions is that there's a phrase that you've kind of set up that you use with your head teachers as a start point to springboard into the conversation. So you're thinking about what that is now, aren't you? Come on, what is it?
Yes, it's very timely. All this work was very timely with the new Ofsted toolkit. But I talked earlier about our self-evaluation framework. So we're very much about an audit culture at Learners. And one of the phrases within that is leaders can speak with authority on their strategy for EYFS. That's the phrase. And part of the work that we've done is to make sure that they can. Mm-hmm. So as I said, we use a self-evaluation framework for all aspects of school life. It's called iAbacus. So there is a bead for ranging from leadership and management to behaviour to attendance outcomes. And part of my role is to collaborate with leaders to rag rate each aspect of school life through audits. And then we can identify strategic priorities. And we wanted to make sure that early years had enough weighting so that leaders could definitely talk with clarity and confidence about their strategy. So we created a set of statements that have been subsequently aligned to the Ofsted toolkit, aligned to the statutory framework, but also aligned to each of the four areas of our vision. And that's a self-evaluation document that leaders can go into provision and rag rate areas of their provision. There's also some prompts on there. There's some blue to-dos, but early years leads and heads can have that overview of their practice and provision. Alongside that, we have a very successful learning walk pro forma that we use in Key Stage 1 and 2 that heads and subject leaders are using confidently and competently across schools, and it's having an impact. Effective impact. So in the same way, we developed an early learners learning walk pro forma. Again,
get your tongue around that.
Yeah, but linked to all four areas of the vision. So just encouraging heads to conduct learning walks in early years beyond phonics, because I think for a point of time, that is what we looked at when we went into early years. So there's a section on there about the characteristics of effective learning. So let's go into provision and let's just look at how children are learning in your setting. So self-evaluation, learning walk, and then the last thing we created was a strategy overview. So that's partly our trust vision. The trust has had impact into that, but then the schools have to make it bespoke for their setting. And then that is a documentation that leaders can use to speak with clarity and confidence about their early years provision.
Yeah. And I just want to touch on something that you've just said about taking monitoring beyond phonics. And again, if anybody's attended my training, but any of the early access training, we talk resolutely about, yes, you know, visiting during gathering carpet times has a place. But if you really want to dig into the quality of your early years and really want to help grow your own understanding of early years and what it's all about, visiting during provision time is vitally important, because that is where the children are showcasing what they know and what they can do, and actually showcasing facing their day-to-day life and experiences within early years. And within that, again, just to kind of highlight it again, not just standing inside, but also going outside and kind of looking at the provision there as well, and looking at what children are showing you in terms of the knowledge and skills that they're demonstrating, in terms of their confidence and competence, in terms of their language and communication. You don't get to see all of those things when you're watching a gathering time necessarily. So it's much more informative to go during provision time, for sure, for sure. So obviously, kind of, you're really clear, and if I can hear kind of how things are kind of connected through. So early years isn't standalone in your trust. It's part of, for every school, it's part of the school, not kind of standalone. And you've talked about kind of your key strands and what you want to achieve. And I think if I summarise, and you can tell me if there's anything else you want to add in, the things that kind of helped you on your journey is, from what you're saying, research, and there's various places that you've kind of done that. Reflection yourself, pulling together key people, but of course bringing others in as they kind of want to, not necessarily doing all the work yourself, which is a good thing. I know you've kind of headed it up and you're keeping that over you and giving direction, but you've got subgroups who have perhaps been tasked to go and do something and bring it back, or maybe have a trial of something and then give feedback. So there's those kind of things taking place. Obviously, importance, not just buying from the people who are going to be doing it in early years, but from key people, pupils across the trust as well. Anything else that you would add to that in terms of what else has helped your journey? You mentioned visiting other schools as well, connecting with other schools.
Yeah. I think one of the most important things was the launch. Mm-hmm. So as with any improvement piece of work, that rolling out is so important. And I was really lucky that I went to Matt and said, I really want a conference day. I really want an early years conference. Not thinking that through completely, that that would mean me standing up and doing a lot of speaking at the time. But that launch pad was really important. So Matt put in place a trust inset day. So all of our schools were closed. It was mandatory for head teachers with early years settings and all of their early years teams to attend that conference day, which they all did. But also some of our junior school heads attended. They were really keen to understand the work that we'd done and the early years rationale. So it was a great day to get everybody in one space to share the work that we'd done, to share the research, to share the findings from Ofsted research and data, but also to look at our resources and make sure that they were rolled out in the right way with the training and expectations around how they should be used. So the launch was probably the most important part once we'd created all the resources.
Mm-hmm. I do think it's worth reiterating, you've been working on this for a good few years before the new Ofsted framework landed, and actually lots of things kind of have aligned in some ways, and you know, inadvertently, but it was well-planned. So again, I think that messaging for your schools was really clear, that we're not doing this for Ofsted, this is what we've been working on, and now look at what the, you know, messaging that's coming out about the new framework. So that kind of helps. And I remember actually chatting with some of your junior school colleagues who were kind of saying, you know, we hear a lot about continuous provision and we don't know that much, and it's important for us to understand it because we need to understand the experiences that those children have had before coming to us. And actually, if there's any good practice that we can continue or maybe build on or extend into our kind of curriculum offer. And you would hope that would also be happening in primaries, of course. But actually, I think, you know, as a standalone infants and juniors, sometimes again, there can be a bit of a disconnect there. But the children and the families are on the same journey, aren't they? It's just it's happening in two different schools. So that's really helpful to know. So I guess now's a good time to then say, so what you've worked on this, other people have kind of invested time in it, the trust have kind of invested time, they've invested financially, obviously releasing staff to kind of work together, looking at kind of supporting to really drive forward with your environments in early years particularly. So what's been the impact?
So because it's been a key area of focus, it's been a trust strategic priority, we've been able to put in additional network meetings for our early years leads. So instead of one or two a year. We've had one every half term. We've been using those GLD data reports. We've invited practitioners in with more expertise. Liz Kenny from the English Hub has led a session on early writing. We're really lucky to have Narinda Gill, who's a RISE advisor, as one of our trustees. She's got a real level of expertise with early years. So she's attended one of those networks. So we've really raised the profile of early years across the trust. And we've tried to maintain that pace of improvement as trust partners in each of our hubs. So formulate some more directed early years questions when we're discussing outcomes, and also challenging heads on their self-evaluation, quality assurance of their provision. We've had mini head sessions, which is where our hub heads get together, and we've done coaching sessions on early years learning walks. So this is what you should be looking for. These are the kind of questions you need to ask. Tell me what you've seen. What would your next steps be? But then on the back of that, the kind of tangible impact that we've seen under the old framework, we've had outstanding judgments in early years. We've got, I would say, more active engagement from adults in provision. We've got that Shrek approach, improved language. We've got you can really see the play progressions being used effectively to support children's understanding and their skill development. We've analysed data, so looking at percentages at this time of the year compared to last year at this time of the year, looking how that's been strengthened, and just the improved knowledge and confidence of our leaders, that's been really evident, and just the passion of some heads to get involved with this and really grasp it and learn more, because you know they're understanding that it's an area of their school that they're not as confident to talk about, but it's really ignited their passion to do so. And as I said, the environment work in terms of resourcing the classrooms is ongoing. But once the indoors has been finalised this year, we'll then start looking at outdoors. So it's an ongoing piece of work. It's not just going to stop. It feels like now the resources are there and the CPD has been shared. That's just the start. We should start and see more impact as the academic year goes on and rolling into next academic year.
Yeah. And it just sounds like it's absolutely raised the profile of early years at a time that's crucial in terms of the bigger, you know, national arena, as it were. But regardless of that, raising the profile of early years and really, you know, engaging heads and having really in-depth conversations about early years just as a group of heads can be really powerful. Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, that's been achieved and much more. In terms of the kind of learning, you will have elevated learning in terms of the quality of the environment, but also that the kind of the progress, if you like, and in turn attainment will come with that over time because of the strength of curriculums that are being put in place. And they won't all be, as I say, Brogan's curriculum, but hopefully they'll be as well thought through. But it sounds like it's really cohesive, and it's cohesive in terms of the strategy and the thinking, but it's also cohesive in how it's working together across the trust. So actually all schools are having very similar conversations about early years, which means that you've opened the doors and actually those conversations should be able to continue. So it sounds really powerful. So in terms of what next, you've just kind of said indoors and then outdoors. Is that the plan? Anything else to add, kind of what's next of things?
Yeah, immediate what's next is looking at the new exemplification materials. I know the focus for our next network, which is in May, is about assessment and profiling. So again, as a working party, we'll really get under the skin of those exemplification materials and roll those out with all of our early years leads. That's immediate. We want to do a bit more work on transition. And again, not making sure our children are key stage one ready, but making sure our key stage one teachers are ready to receive our early years children and what that means for them. And there's already some good work happening in some of our schools around continuous provisioning key stage one. That's been really impactful. So to make sure that transition process is right, not just within school, but with parents as well, using the Kindred Squared materials. We've used those last year, but just making sure the timing around sharing of that is right so that parents are aware of what that national expectation is of children starting school.
I'm right in saying you are XREC users, aren't you? The Reception Baseline Assessment Tool users. You trialled that this year for some schools, is that correct?
Yeah, so some of our settings trialled that this year, and we wanted to get some really effective feedback from those schools to see whether it was something we wanted to continue with. And of course, the resource is amazing. So we're rolling that out with all of our schools. No, and I'm not on commission. But just the impact that the wellbeing and involvement statements, the impact that's having on development of the curriculum and provision, looking at the on entry statements and how that's helped shape provision and curriculum moving forward. We all know that the RBA doesn't give us exactly what we want, but the XREC really did. So we're rolling that out with all of our schools in September. So there'll be some training in the summer term for the schools that are not yet using it.
Yeah, that's great. And I think it's interesting you're talking about this transition, because obviously for those schools that have invested in the whole suite, and this isn't a sales pitch, this is genuinely part of the conversation around transition. For those of the schools that have invested in the suite, so done the baseline, the beyond baseline, and supported transition to year one, that conversation that you were just having about making sure or trying to support our year one receiving teams to be ready, actually that tool goes quite a long way in terms of unpicking characteristics and actually looking at those next steps, almost bridging the gap between GLD and national curriculum, or just before GLD and national curriculum. So that's kind of really interesting. And I think very exciting to hear, you know, you've got schools doing continuous provision in Key Stage 1. We know, don't we, out there, there's a huge national discussion about it. And I think one of your colleagues was talking at a conference last week, wasn't she, about how it's working in their school in year one and year two. Am I, is that right? Year one
and year two? That's right. She's got a hybrid model in year two at the moment, because obviously they've come through a more formal year one, but next year the plan is that both year one and year two will be fully into continuous provision, and the delegates at the conference on Friday were really keen to understand more. She'd got a lot of examples of how that was working and the impact it was having, and they were really keen to understand more about it.
Well, I can say I was really keen about getting her on for a podcast, and she has all that signed on the dotted line, so watch this space, listeners. We all have another one coming.
She would be great.
So let's kind of draw it together in terms of, you know, if you're, you know, we've got listeners who are early years leads, MATRUS leads, heads of school, exec heads, all sorts of people kind of listening to this kind of podcast. But if they were thinking of developing an early years strategy, because it might be something that in their school or in their trust early years is perhaps not as strong as they would like it to be, or they want to make the very best of strengthening those early foundations, what would be your top tips for an effective strategy? Come on, give us the magic wand.
Top tips. I would say understand why early years is a priority for you and define that, because it will really help shape your vision for what you want for your early years learners. But keep that at the heart of every decision you make. That vision is so important. Understand what's working well and not throwing everything out.
Absolutely. And that's hold key. That's key. I talk a lot when I go to schools about, you know, what's going well, or what do the children bring to your setting that's a real positive. And sometimes schools can find that quite difficult to talk about, because we're often on with what next, what are the gaps? And of course we have to talk about those and address those and tackle those, but we mustn't lose sight of the positive. So I think that's really key.
Yeah, holding on to that, but also being very clear and candid about what needs to change. And those direct messages delivered softly, but really being clear about what needs to change. Look at what the data's telling you. Look at that GLD report that's available now. Build that guiding team, not just colleagues that think like you, but that diversity around the table, understanding what's in it for them. So people will come to new initiatives, won't they? And their first thought will be, what's in it for me? But but kind of considering that gets the buy-in from other people. Mm-hmm. Creating the resources, you've said it earlier, Sarah, that makes it easier to teach, but makes it easier for the children to learn. Being realistic on what you can achieve within the timescale you've got, and make sure it's research-led and evidence-based. We try and keep things simple and unambiguous, but with that element of monitoring, revisiting and adapting and amending as necessary, but just focusing on what your children need.
What really matters, absolutely, is what's going to make the difference for those children. And I really like the fact that you say kind of be clear in what needs to happen or what's not working. And I would add to that, or kind of expand slightly and be saying, thinking about things that can perhaps drop off, things that we don't need to do anymore, as well as celebrating this is working well and this is what we want to do new. There does need to be a real kind of honest look at, is there anything that we can stop doing? Because sometimes what will happen with new initiatives is we keep doing the stuff that works well because we're really invested in that and we know it's working, and then we take on something new, but sometimes we don't stop doing some of the things that we really now don't need. Yeah. And as a consequence, that can be an overwhelming nature and kind of overfull, and people are trying to do too much. So as part of that, what's going well, what do we need to do next, and being candid, as you say, really do have a focused look at, is there anything that we're doing that actually isn't working as effectively, or that if we're going to do this new thing, we don't need to carry on with, and actually giving teams permission, official permission, to let go of that and stop that, because sometimes people don't, and then they become that full bookshelf, don't they, that gets fuller and fuller and fuller. Yeah, and it's too overwhelming.
And that's one of the questions in our school improvement, the patronising list I mentioned at the beginning.
One of
the questions is, what do we need to stop doing for exactly that reason?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes that's not the question that gets asked enough, maybe.
No.
So we're thinking about. It's been great to chat with you. And I mean, we've worked on and off together over the last couple of years. So I've heard essences of all of this and seen elements of it in kind of conferences that I've, been very privileged to be involved in alongside you. But it's nice to hear it kind of pulled all together in terms of how cohesive it is and that kind of joint thinking. And I think the thing is, when you're developing a strategy, it is just that, it's a strategy, not just a to-do list. There's got to be a deep understanding behind it. And yes, off the back of it will come an action plan of things that need to be done. But the strategy is that deep thinking, that deep understanding, and kind of then looking at how to kind of plan something that is going to enable you to kind of implement and achieve your vision. So I look forward to hearing how things move forward, particularly around kind of, all the schools developing their own curriculums and how that works, but also around particularly the taking steps into Key Stage 1 sounds really exciting as well. Yeah. So I shall have my ear to the ground. But good luck with it all. And as I say, I know it's been lots and lots of hard work and it's very much been your baby. And I know you will say, but I've not done all of it. But actually, that's the whole point. As somebody who's strategizing and leading it, you shouldn't have to do all of it. It's about how that plan works together. And you've done really well at kind of putting that together and rolling it out and being well supported by Matt as well, of course, because that does make the difference. So good luck with the onward journey. And I shall wait to hear the onward things. You take care.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I hope you found it a valuable listen and that you've taken some things away to reflect on, or maybe things that you want to discuss with your colleagues. Of course, remember, if you want to talk about any of the issues that we've explored today, or you need support with other matters in your school, then do feel free to drop me an email, sarah@earlyexcellence.com, or why not get connected with me on LinkedIn or Twitter. Anyway, take care and join me next time for some more genuine head-to-head conversation.